It's his decision to include that. But actually, if you look across the statements, I think if you look across the statements, there is broad consistency across them, and there is no material difference on the policy related to China, which has been pretty much shared across this dispatch box.
Sir Jeremy Wright, Speaker, it's now very clear that the Crown Prosecution Service asked the government more than once over more than a year for some additional evidence on what the CPS considered to be the crucial question of whether or not China constituted a national security threat during the relevant period. It seems to me, having read those statements, that there are two important questions at least that arise. The first is the one that's just been asked to him by his honourable friend. Given it was clear by that point, when the Deputy National Security Advisor made his second and third statements, that the question he was being asked to comment on was whether or not that bar of being a national security threat was met or not, what is the possible relevance of the inclusion of information about China as an economic opportunity? Surely the minister can see, and the government can see, that that only weakens the substance of the question that that particular witness was being asked to answer. And it would be useful to understand whether the DNSA came to that view on his own, or whether it was suggested to him that that would be a useful thing to include. The second question, I think, is this. The government's been very clear, the minister's been very clear today, the Prime Minister was very clear yesterday, how disappointed the government is at the outcome of this trial, and how much the government wanted this prosecution to proceed. Given the length of time and the number of requests received by the CPS, surely it would be logical to assume the government would be straining every sinew to find extra evidence to meet the CPS's requirement. Whether it thought the CPS was right to ask for it or not, it was clear that with that extra evidence, the CPS would proceed with the case as the government says it wanted. What evidence can the government provide to us that every sinew was strained and that the government did everything it could do to find that evidence? And if that evidence is in fact available and others could find it, won't the government have some explaining to do?
Thank you. Can I thank him for the thank you for the question and the tone of it. On the first point about on the same question of can you just remind me? I'm so sorry, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, the first question is about why the Deputy National Security Advisor included in his statement reference to economic opportunity when he knew that wasn't the question he was being asked or the relevant question.
So sorry, and thank you for that. The point I was going to make is on that, is that that is to provide broader context of the position of the government at the time in relation to its position on China, but it is an independent decision. It is a decision taken freely without interference from ministers or advisers for the DSNA to do that. That's not my position to account for. That's his decision, and that was the evidence submitted under consecutive governments on that. So that's all I can add to that, I'm afraid.
Beauregard.
Could I take the minister back to the wording of the Act? The Act says it's an offence to pass information that would be directly or indirectly useful to an enemy. It does not say that it is an offence to directly or indirectly pass to an enemy information that would be useful. The difference is that in the first, it's the usefulness of the information that constitutes the offence. You might be passing it to any unauthorised person. In the second, it is the passing of it to an enemy that constitutes the offence. By using the second interpretation, it is therefore possible to argue that unless the person the information was passed to was an enemy, then no offence was committed. And that would seem to me how the two men had the case dropped. In fact, by passing it to a person not authorised to receive it, friend or foe, they had allowed it to circulate outside of the UK government's control, where it could then be obtained and used by an enemy. Surely this is what the Act sought to criminalise, and if the Minister agrees, is he satisfied that the wording of the Act is as it should be, or does he think that the prosecution was dropped erroneously?
That's not commenting on whether it's dropped erroneously or not is not something that any minister will do from this dispatch box.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make a broader point about China's activities in the United Kingdom related to this. We currently have the application for the super embassy on the government's desk. And as the minister says, and has been acknowledged, China is a threat and actively working to undermine our national security. The Right Honourable Member for Streatham and Croydon North said that the government would never compromise national security. So how can the government give any consideration to approving the Chinese super embassy, which will give extraordinary capability to China to continue to expand its espionage activities, but also to target Hong Kongers on British soil with their transnational repression?
Can I thank you for the question? On the Chinese embassy, this decision, as he says, has been taken by the communities and local government minister. It will be taken in due course. It is completely unrelated to this case, and it is completely unrelated to anything in it. And that is an important point to reinforce.
Ruth Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the minister for his responses so far on this important matter. Can I draw his attention to subparagraph D of paragraph 21 of the Deputy National Security Advisor's initial witness statement, and in it he references Newport Wafer Fab, as it was then called in 2023. Does the minister share my concerns that this wafer fab's sale could have been adversely affected by this leak of private information, thus jeopardising the livelihoods of good people in my constituency of Newport West and Isloyne? And what can he say to reassure me and others that this cannot happen again?
Can I thank you for that? And I can understand how seriously her and her constituents will take it. If she'll permit me, I will get back to her with a substantive answer on that from the team on that, as soon as I can after today.
May I say thank you very much, and I apologise for earlier outbursts, but may I just place on the...
Sorry. I'm not in the position I need any advice or any help. I've enough from this side. I don't want it starting over here as well. I think, in fairness, we will take it there was an apology to the front bench at that time. Tom Tugendhat.
May I start, Mr. Speaker, by saying very briefly quite how this feels? My home has been broken into, my files have been ransacked, somebody has been put into my office by a hostile state, and two parties are playing politics with it. This is national security of the United Kingdom. The elected people of Tunbridge chose me. They may have chosen wrong, but they did. The elected people of other parts of the United Kingdom chose everybody else in this House. It is up to them to choose who represents them. And yet here we have two individuals seeking to extract information from us. And the government's response is not, as mine was, do everything you can to make sure the prosecution works, but no, no, process, process. Well, who the hell's side are you on? This isn't about the bureaucracy. This is about leadership. We're not sent here to be civil servants. We're sent here to lead the country and to make decisions. And instead, and I feel nothing but fondness for the minister in his place, and I'm very sorry that he's been sent out on his not quite first outing, but pretty close. It is on his first outing to defend the indefensible. Because what he's got the position of doing now is to effectively say that he's not a politician, he's a bureaucrat, there's nothing he can do, and frankly, he shouldn't even be here in the first place. Because that seems to be the Prime Minister's line. Yeah. Former Attorneys General have got up and they have prosecuted on the state's behalf. This Attorney General and this Prime Minister have said, not on my watch, not worth the effort.
Can I thank you for that? And just say, I have huge respect for him, even if that evidently isn't mutual at the moment. But let's see if we can get to that place. Look, the Prime Minister answered the question yesterday. I do fully appreciate how personally this affects him and how personally affects his constituency and indeed his office as well. I do understand that. I'm genuinely not trying to play politics in this. I'm genuinely trying to tell... I see his eyes raised at that. But I'm genuinely not, and I'm genuinely trying to tell the story of this, of how this has progressed, and to reiterate from the dispatch box the point the Prime Minister made yesterday and the Security Minister made on Monday, that the government's position, under successive governments, but the government's position, particularly under this Prime Minister, is there will be no interference with the CPS in the process of this, and that every effort was made to try and deliver evidence in the way to support their case when it was asked for.
Peter Swallow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Honourable Member for Tunbridge emphasises so emphatically, I think across the whole House we're appalled at the actions of the Chinese state. But I just want to take it back to the precise law under which these charges were brought. An act that was first introduced in 1911 and which the Conservative Party set out to review when they were in government in 2015, but did not successfully actually replace with a law that was fit for purpose until 2023, 8 years later. So my question to my honourable friend is this. Had the Conservatives got on with the job and replaced that law quicker, would we be in a different position now?
Can I thank you for that question? He invites me to play party politics, and I've promised several times I'm not going to do that. Factually, it is true, though, that if the Espionage Act had been updated more quickly and that the current Act had been in place at the time of this, the case would have been able to proceed. That is the case. That is the case. Decisions were taken not to do that. I think that is greatly regrettable.
Stephen Gattins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'll welcome the Minister to his place in his first outing. I have to say, I think the Prime Minister owes him a favour. He'll understand the need for absolute clarity, and I know he says that. But given the serious threat that he's said that China poses to us, can he be absolutely clear on two issues? One is that there was no ministerial involvement whatsoever in pulling this case, and two, that the government provided all evidence that it was asked for. I'm afraid just saying it is my understanding is probably not good enough. We need some assurances. Thank you.
The answer is yes to both cases.
Sir Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Given that the Deputy National Security Advisor is a civil servant and therefore accountable, who was holding him to account for the job that he was doing? May I just emphasise that I'm sure he was doing his level and honourable best in the circumstances in which he found himself. But it is really beyond belief that as it became apparent from the third inquiry, where the Director of Public Prosecutions was asking for a clear statement that China was a national security threat, that nobody was capable of telling him, well, actually, you better say that. You better say that. And the idea that he was somehow beyond any influence from anybody is laughable. One can only conclude that this conspiracy of omission was something the government wanted because they didn't want this trial to go ahead.
No, that's really not the case. That's not the case. Firstly, on the DSNA, who, as people have worked with will know, is of the highest calibre and integrity on this matter. He presented evidence under successive governments on this and devoid of any influence, as I say, from advisers or government on this side. I cannot say if that's the case on the other side, but I'm sure that is the case. But he presented that evidence freely, and he presented that case to the best of his ability under successive governments.
Richard Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Leaders should delegate responsibility but not accountability. The argument at Prime Minister's questions yesterday revolved around whether a minister or a special adviser had influenced the collapse of the case, and it was established that neither ministers nor special advisers had involvement in the provision of evidence. But does the minister think it would have been worth ministers reflecting on the Intelligence and Security Committee's 2023 China report and requesting sight of the witness statements provided by the senior civil servant before they were submitted? In essence, has the government sought to delegate to a civil servant responsibility and accountability?
No, look, it's not the government's position. It is not the government's successive positions for the government to vet witness statements made in cases like this. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what you're asking. So it's not that. But look, across the three witness statements, it's very clear the DSNA makes several times sets out the very serious threats that China poses. He sets them out 15 or 20 times, I can't remember the exact number, consistently across it. The decision not to prosecute on the basis of that is then taken by the CPS.
Nick Timothy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was slightly baffled by the Minister's answer just now, saying that it's not the government's job, so it's not ministers' jobs to vet witness statements when they're made on behalf of the government. This is exactly the point. They are accountable. The Prime Minister said that the evidence that was relevant to the case was the last government's China policy, but the statements published last night showed that they were changed to reflect this government's China policy. This is not the only way in which the Prime Minister's story has fallen apart, but on this specific point, what the Prime Minister told the House wasn't correct, was it?
It was. There was no... It was. There was no... It was. There was no political interference from this government under any of those statements that were made. There was not. And it doesn't matter how many times the honourable members allege it, that is the case.
Richard Tide.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amongst all the noise of this China spy scandal, my constituents in Boston and Skegness, and I think the whole British people, want some clarity from this government. Does the government view China as a national security threat? Yes or no?
The evidence throughout sets out the threats China poses multiple times. There is complete consistency between the two. Obviously, there are very serious threats. I read them out in my statements. Yes.
Dr. Andrew.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Deputy National Security Advisor, in his evidence, is clear. China is the greatest state economic threat to the UK. Yeah. Does the Minister agree with that? And is he seriously trying to suggest that the Deputy National Security Advisor, given what he has said in his evidence, didn't clear what he was doing with the CPS, with his superiors, Jonathan Powell, or ministers?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying, and the Prime Minister said yesterday, and the Security Minister said on Monday.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Notwithstanding the decision to drop this case, it's clear that China is trying to undermine our democracy. Will the government include all Chinese officials, Hong Kong Special Administrative Region officials and Chinese Communist Party linked organisations on the enhanced tier of the Foreign Influence Registration Scheme?
Yes.
Can I thank you for that? Can I get back to her on the specific? I'm not across the specific of that in my brief. I'll come back to her.
Judge Wilde.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Minister knows the Prime Minister well, having been one of his close advisers as well as his parliamentary private secretary. So why did the Prime Minister, when he learned a major trial concerning spying on members of this place was going to collapse, do nothing? Why didn't he ask if anything could be done to stop the trial collapsing? Is that what he actually wanted to happen? And if not, why didn't he act?
No, as I've said many times, the government wanted the trial to proceed and allowed every opportunity for evidence to be provided for it and for the CPS to gather that. The Prime Minister has already stated when he was informed that the trial was at that process. But the Prime Minister, as he said yesterday in response to my honourable friend, make clear it is not the Prime Minister's position to interfere or to interfere in that place of it. And that is what, and the case was then dropped by the CPS independently.
James Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The CPS has independence from ministers. Civil servants do not. So the whole point of our constitution is that civil servants can never be held, thrown out and put out under the bus because ministers are responsible. They own everything the civil servants do. There is no carve-out because you've got this high title of being a national security advisor. They're a civil servant. And it wasn't once, Mr. Speaker. It was repeatedly. It was an iterative process by which the CPS asked for and said, there is a gap. What is it? And can he please stop trying to make out that we have a different constitution to one we have, in which he suggests that somehow ministers aren't responsible for the behaviour of their civil servants, when that is the foundation of accountability within our parliamentary system?
Just referring back to what I've said already, it is not the place under this government or previously for ministers to be vetting process or to interfering in evidence on that matter.
Ira Mullen.
The battle with China is not just an economic one, it's also a battle of ideas about how the state should operate. And the fact that this case has collapsed is making a complete mockery of our arguments for how a state should operate compared to how China does things.
He's laughing at us.
And can I suggest to the Minister that, along with the Prime Minister, he's in danger of inadvertently misleading the House. Yeah. He's been asked a number of times now about the content of the statement in relation to the Conservative Party position at the time and insisted that the statements made only reflected the position of the Conservative government at the time. Can the Minister then explain why it is that the exact wording in relation to China and its role in the Labour Party manifesto ended up in that statement?
Very good.
The exact word. The wording in that statement is put in there to provide wider context of the situation on it. But as I've said many times, and I'll keep saying, that wording is provided set independently by the DSNA without any involvement from ministers or political advisers.
Were you in at the beginning? No, well, don't bother wasting my time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can the Minister tell us whether the Attorney General shares the concern of the CPS that there isn't enough evidence to prosecute?
Very good question.
I think every member of this House would share concern that this case didn't proceed and that there wasn't enough evidence in it, but that decision was taken by the CPS.
Bradley Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Earlier this week, the Security Minister came to this House and said that the National Security Advisor does not have any links to 48 Group, a group that promotes economic links between the UK and China. Why did the Minister say this when the National Security Advisor was listed as a Fellow of the 48 Group on their website until very recently?
I can't reply on the specific of the 48 Group. I don't know that. But I can't say the National Security Advisor was not involved in any part of this, as the Prime Minister made clear yesterday.
Fox.
Mr. Speaker, the CPS decision not to prosecute leaves our nation less secure. What assurance can the Minister give this House that the government did everything in its power to ensure the CPS had the necessary evidence to prosecute?
As I've said several times, this government did everything it could to provide to support the CPS in that process and to allow evidence to be submitted. But I would gently point out again, one of the reasons this did not proceed was because of Conservative policy at the time, not materially different from this policy, and because of the reliance on the 1911 Act.
No, Jim Shannon first.
Mr. Speaker, thank you, Mr. Speaker, for that clarification. Minister, what a baptism of fire today. As an MP, I understand very honestly the beautiful picture that words can paint, but I also understand the damage by ugly words. And unfortunately, I am seeing here the problems that playing with words is leading to. With great respect to the Minister, does he acknowledge that play on words by government and CPS further erodes trust in government, and the witness statements may be construed to underline the views of my constituents in Strangford and indeed elsewhere that China is a threat to those in this great United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland? So will the Minister meet with his Cabinet colleagues to find an open and transparent path to justice, not simply for this, but as a message to the Chinese government to ensure that they accept the sovereignty of this country, of this nation, and that the protection that should and does exist for all those who live here, my constituents and everybody's constituents.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think he raises a good point, and thank you for his kind words on welcoming me. If I can speak as many times as he does in this, then I'll be very grateful. I'm not sure anyone's there. Look, he does make a very serious point about the threats posed by China and the threats posed to his constituents and all of ours in that. That really is the central message we should be trying to get back to, of how the government, how cross-party we can work on it, and how with CPS, etc., we can all work to make sure this kind of thing can never happen again.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Until the statements published last night, some of us had no idea about the details of this case. But the government appears unwilling to answer three questions, Mr. Speaker, that have been asked repeatedly in this chamber. So can you kindly help me ascertain how we get answers to them? The first is proof that for the 14 months the CPS asked, the DNSA at no point spoke to any ministers or National Security Advisor. Why, when the Prime Minister was informed the case would collapse, that he did not do everything in his power, and evidence that he took any action at all? And why, if the government is so disappointed that the case collapsed, why to this day there have been no repercussions for the Chinese Communist Party, despite the government in power having every tool in their box to make clear that we will protect this House, this democracy and this country?
Can I just say, I can't prolong the UQ. What I would say is, and I know the Honourable Lady well, she won't leave it at that point of order. What I do know is that she will go and use all the options that are open to her, and I'm sure that she'll be coming back in not too far a distant time. A point of order, Tom Toogan, who's not going to keep this argument debate going?
I'm going to raise a different argument, Mr. Speaker, if I may. Given that the government's position is that the bureaucrats run the government, the bureaucrats are in charge of everything, may we dissolve this House and save the taxpayer the money? Because clearly this isn't a democracy anymore.
Yay! I'm sure the Honourable Member doesn't want to give up his seat quite so quickly. Right, let us move on.
Point of order, Grahams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure you've taken a close interest in this issue, the fact that it goes to the heart of this Parliament, the protection of members of Parliament and the secrets that we sometimes hold. But I'm sure you will share with me concern that someone on their very first outing is sent out on this issue, and that the Prime Minister used yesterday's PMQs and has not faced proper scrutiny in this House in a statement. So can I gently ask you whether you would think to have him make a statement to the House?
Order. It's not even a point of order, and you know that. And we are keeping the debate going. Well, the one says, I do congratulate the Honourable Member. I do feel sorry that this is his first outing. But I've got to say, if you take the paycheck, you also take the pen to go with it. Before we move to business... Right, OK, let's... Before we move to business questions, I'd like to pay tribute to BBC Radio 4 Today in Parliament programme, which last week celebrated its 80th anniversary. Yeah. Barring the occasional power cut, Today in Parliament has been broadcasting every night that Parliament has been sitting since it was first aired in the 9th of October 1945. My predecessor and great friend, the late Baroness Betty Boothroyd, thought the programme was champion and once commented that she would even put her boot down to listen to it in bed. So on behalf of the House, I would like to say congratulations to Dame Parliament and its many presenters for covering our proceedings in the incredible 13,000 episodes over 80 wonderful years. Business questions, I now call the Shadow Leader of the House.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Will the Leader of the House give us the forthcoming business?
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I shall give the business for the week, the week commencing the 20th of October, which includes Monday the 20th of October, Committee of the Whole House and remaining stages of the Diego Garcia Military Base and British Indian Ocean Territory Bill, Tuesday the 21st, Committee of the Whole House of the Sentencing Bill, Wednesday the 22nd of October, consideration of a Lord's message to the Renters' Right Bill, followed by debate on a motion relating to the financial assistance to industry, followed by a motion to approve the draft National Health Service Procurement, Slavery and Human Trafficking Regulations 2025, followed by a general debate on devolution in Scotland. The subject for this debate was determined by the Backbench Business Committee. On Thursday the 23rd of October, a general debate on Black History Month. On Friday the 24th of October, the House will not be sitting. And the provisional business for the week commencing the 27th of October includes Monday the 27th of October, remaining stages of the Victims and Courts Bill.
Deputy Shadley.